The show is live and local, your connection to local music and more. And we've got a bunch of guests today. Later on in the show, live in our studio, three members of the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band who are going to London for a two-week tour and giving a kickoff party and performance on Saturday afternoon in Urbana. And in the first part of the program, we'll have Elena Orioste, who is a violinist and winner of the Sphinx competition, which we will hear about in a little bit. She's performing in the Sunday Salon concert Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And also on the show today, David Commande, conductor of the Heartland Festival Orchestra, which is still a new group, just formed now for its second concert in Peoria. They're giving two performances this weekend, Friday night and Sunday afternoon at the Gateway Building Grand Ballroom in Peoria. More on all those performances on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Elena Orioste with pianist Hugh Sung in the third movement of Beethoven's seventh piano sonata. Heard here in a performance on Live and Local on FM 90.9. She will be performing in recital Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Follinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. A program that includes music by Schubert, Richard Strauss, Prokofiev, and Yenu Ubai. I had a chance to talk with her just this morning by telephone. She is the winner of the Sphinx competition in both the younger category and the senior category. Just a couple of years ago, she won the latter, and that's allowed her to kick off her performing career. She also has won a couple of other performances, including the London Music Masters International Career Development Award. Elena Orioste, again in conversation this morning, and I just started by asking her to tell us a little bit about the Sphinx competition.
Well, the Sphinx competition is actually just one of many components of the Sphinx organization, which is, in my opinion, really miraculous organization whose main mission is to diversify classical music and bring it, in particular, to African-American and Latino communities. So they have a lot of programs under their wing. They have after-school programs. They're Detroit-based, so a lot of the programs are in Detroit for young kids, and they have a summer music program for teenagers, and they have this competition for Black and Latino string players. And I was lucky enough to have participated and won the junior division in 2003 and senior division in 2007, and they have just provided me with the most really unbelievable opportunities.
Including specifically, what did they gear you up for?
Well, it's always been my dream to be a violin soloist, and as a winner of the Sphinx competition, they set you up with the most just really astounding performance opportunities. So I have soloed with the Cleveland Orchestra, the Boston Pops, the Atlanta Symphony, National Symphony, just gigs that are really jaw-dropping in scope and prestige. So I feel really, really lucky to, they just basically confirmed that my dream was, in fact, something that I wanted to pursue.
Did you at any point wonder if that was a dream that would be fulfilled?
Well, it's a really tricky path. There are so many talented musicians out there that it's difficult to distinguish yourself, and you basically have to convince presenters and everyone that you can offer something special. And regardless of whether I can. It was just always something that I wanted to do. Originally, you know, when I was 6 years old, I think it was more about the allure of wearing a beautiful gown and and being on a pretty stage in a nice venue. But as I got older and older, it was, you know, such fantastic repertoire and the experience of being in front, but also playing chamber music with this big group. You know, it's really a give and take. It's not all about the soloist. It's really about communicating with the orchestra and the conductor. That just had infinite appeal to me. To go back to your question, there have definitely been times when I thought it would just be absolutely impossible. Like I said, it is such a select field, and also it's sort of a, I don't want to say lonely, but it's difficult in many ways, the lifestyle. You're on the road all the time, and especially if you're in a town where you don't know anyone, it can be a little, you know, you're by yourself a lot, so that's tricky, but it's definitely worth it for me.
So how do you handle that aspect of it?
Well, it gets easier because the more and more places you go and the older you get, you know people in more places, so I can usually... If I know someone in the town where I'm going to, I consider myself lucky and, you know, we'll at least meet up at some point. And I'm also doing a lot of traveling this season, especially with as a recitalist. So my pianist and I are good friends, so it's fun to travel together. And, you know, recently I played a concert. I did the Brahms double concerto and the Beethoven triple concerto, and the other musicians were really, really fun and cool people, so we wound up spending a lot of time together. So,
and you did a few
performances
of those pieces, so you hung around with them a bit.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about the repertoire that you like to perform. So your disc with pianist Hugh Sung has Beethoven, which of course is fairly standard, Janáček, which is not, a little piece by Ubai, which is sort of a common flash piece, I guess, and then this piece called Seashell, which is one I haven't even heard of. Does this represent what you're hoping to do with your own solo repertory?
Well, I enjoy coming up with programs. I think it's a very fun aspect of it, and I tend to gravitate towards programs that are diverse. I don't totally understand the appeal of like an all Beethoven program. Of course, it's fantastic music, but when I go to a concert, I enjoy, you know, a range of things. So that collection of pieces was actually the second half of my graduation recital program from Curtis. So that had special significance for me. But in terms of my favorite repertoire, for concertos, I have some favorites. I'm sort of obsessed with the Elgar concerto, which, as beautiful as it is, no one wants to seem to book because it's really, really long. It's almost 50 minutes. I love the Barber concerto. I think it's one of the most beautiful, open, sentimental pieces for violin and orchestra. I love the Beethoven concerto, of course. Oh, there's so many. And then with recitals, I still feel like I have a ton of holes in my recital repertoire. So I look forward over the next few years to learning as much repertoire as I can. And just continuing to come up with diverse programs and, you know, maybe perform things that aren't necessarily heard so much. You know, you can only hear the Frank Sinatra so many times.
Sure. You have a particular violin on loan to you. How did you get hold of that, and why is that important for somebody at your level to have a violin of the sort you have?
Well, actually, the particular violin that I'm playing now is relatively new to me. I had been playing a 1750 Michelangelo Bergonzi, on loan from a very, very amazing, generous man who lives in Maryland, Dr. Charles King. And the way I was introduced to him was very unexpected. in my first 2 years of Curtis, I was roommates with a girl named Bella, and at the time her legal guardian was, I feel bad if I get this wrong, but I think the dean of music at University of Michigan. So he was obviously very well connected and was affiliated with Meadowmount at the time, and the Bregonzi happened to belong to Meadowmount. So anyway, he set the sort of connection up, and all of a sudden I found myself in possession of this Bregonzi. It was on loan to me, and I thought it was just going to be a one-year thing, but then the contract kept getting renewed, and I wound up playing this Bregonzi and getting very, very attached to it for the next 6 years. And, you know, I had forged this relationship with the donor, Dr. King, and I got a call at the beginning of October saying, he likes you, and he wants to upgrade and find a better violin and loan it to you. I was like, are you kidding me? So it all happened really fast, and now, as of the first week of October, I'm playing an absolutely amazing Alessandro Galliano, made in 1706, and I'm very, very, very in love with it. And while not necessary to have an amazing old Italian violin, it is certainly very helpful and very wonderful. It just, a violin of that caliber, just it produces sounds that, you know, maybe a more modern instrument can't yet. And more importantly, I think it inspires the player to look for a new level of sophistication in sound and in execution. And, you know, you can't rely on a great violin. You have to work hard at being a great musician. But certainly, it's very inspiring to play on such an amazing instrument.
Elena Urioste, violinist and winner of the 2007 Sphinx competition, who's going to be heard in recital on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts with pianist Jonathan Coombs. Here she is with pianist Hugh Sung in the encore of her, I actually presume this is her inaugural CD, a little piece by Carl Engel called Seashell. Piece called Seashell by Carl Engel, performed by violinist Elena Urioste and pianist Hugh Sung. And again, Ms. Urioste performing in the Sunday Salon recital at the Krannert Center, Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. For more information, go to krannertcenter.com. Our program today on Live and Local on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign, also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713. Yesterday I had a conversation with David Commande, who is conductor of the new Heartland Festival Orchestra in Peoria. They are giving their second concert, actually twice this weekend, Friday night and Sunday afternoon, at the Global Gateway Building, I think it's called, the Gateway Building Grand Ballroom in Peoria. Friday night's concert at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. The program includes an arrangement of the 8th String Quartet of Shostakovich for strings, obviously, and the complete performance of Stravinsky's L'Histoire du Soldat, or The Soldier's Tale. And I asked David how he decided to choose this particular piece in this orchestra's inaugural season.
Well, The Soldier's Tale is a project. First of all, it's a piece I've always loved since I first saw and heard it. And my first exposure was really as a young boy. I was taken to the Paul Masson Vineyards, where they had an outdoor performance in front of a wine cellar on this lovely slope, and the piece just captured my imagination. The story of this man, I must have identified with him immediately. The drama of his struggles, his encounter with the devil, it just grabbed my imagination. So this piece has been something which I truly adore since my first encounter, and I've had experiences of performing some or all of it, but never fully staged. And one of the things we mean to do with the Heartland Festival Orchestra is to overcome some of the isolation of the arts one from the other, and the idea of mounting a spectacle like this, which includes the spoken word, the dramatic action, and dancing, in effect poetry, really appealed to me, and I think fits in with the mission.
And how did you go about choosing the various performers?
Well, the performers are, as you well know, some of the strongest in the area. I did make a point of seeking out a group of people who are geographically fairly close to one another, and that was for practical reasons of rehearsal. And it's worked wonderfully. But the fact is that in and around the faculty of Illinois State University, primarily, we have great players, as everybody knows, who many of whom have performed this piece, at least in its concert suite versions.
And so tell us sort of the instrumental stars of this show, and then the extra musical people.
Well, we have in the string section, representing the strings of the orchestra, we have concertmaster Sarah Gentry, and Alex McHattie is the bass player. The wind section features Roger Garrett, clarinet, and Terry Marr, bassoon. The brass section is represented by Amy Gilreath, who is one of our founding board members, by the way.
And that's on trumpet.
Trumpet. And Steve Parsons on trombone. And then we have David Collier, also of ISU, representing the percussion section.
And the extra musical people, the non-musical people.
Well, our program actually is all about collaboration. We have as narrator and director of the dramatic action, George Brown, who is the head of the drama department at Bradley University. We have as the soldier Stephen K. Stone, who is at Illinois Central College. He's also the choreographer of the dance sections. The devil is played by Charlie Brown, who is a professor, actually, at Illinois Central College, but who also performs in a lot of drama in the area. And our princess is Rebecca von Rothenje, who is the director of the Peoria Academy of Dance at the Peoria Ballet.
Well, that's a nice job of grabbing people from different walks of life who seem to be pretty prominent in that community by the sound of it.
Well, there are remarkable resources,
who are about to...
and that's one of the interesting things upon which Rocco Landisman commented last week when he visited in Peoria, the newly appointed chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, and he had a lot of good things to say about the vibrancy of our arts program, despite his assumptions at the outset, which were far to the contrary of what he found here when he visited.
Yeah, well, I heard a little bit about that. He made some sort of maybe unintentional, or was it intentional, slur about Peoria in some speech?
It was the typical thing. If Peoria is taken to represent the absolute middle of the middle, literally of the United States, but also middle in the sense of middle quality, he made a comment to the effect of, "Well, I don't imagine that Peoria has a theater like the Goodman Theater or, you know, some New York theater." And he just made it as an offhand remark. And the people in Peoria Theater actually took him up on it and wrote to him and said, "Hey, what's the big idea?" And very cleverly and I think wisely, he responded by saying, "Well, I'd like to learn about what you're doing there." And so he came to visit.
Well, good for him and good for them for making their voices heard.
That's right.
And, of course, good for you for starting this new program there. The Stravinsky piece is kind of interesting because there is acting and there is dance, But the acting part is actually almost exclusively in between all the music bits. It's almost like the music is sort of incidental. Would you call it that way?
It would be easy to call it incidental music, and then I suppose we have to ask ourselves, well, what do we mean by incidental? Incidental certainly is it's next to, for the most part, as you say, the dramatic action. And yet, I think that it moves the dramatic action forward, and it also supplies a psychological context or portrait without words, which enriches the effect and the power of the dramatic action.
I imagine it makes a challenge for whoever is directing the stage movement of what to do with the actors while the music is playing, because there are stretches, you know, it's just music and the actors have to figure out what to do.
Yes, and that's a choice every director would make. And however, it doesn't require that the actors be acting or active throughout the entirety of the musical interludes, if we call them that.
David Commande, conductor of the Heartland Festival Orchestra. That was just part of our conversation from yesterday when I had a chance to talk to him on the phone. He's in Peoria, of course, and they're performing the Stravinsky Soldier's Tale as well as the Chamber Symphony of Dmitri Shostakovich and a musical surprise at the end of the program. Friday night, that's tonight at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in the Gateway Building Grand Ballroom in Peoria. And for more information and completed information on how to get tickets, you can go to their rather wonderful website. It's heartlandfestivalorchestra.org. And there are photos of their first performance, also some video clips, I think, of their first performance. And you can see David's blog on both the Stravinsky and some other things that have been on his mind. And again, how you can get tickets, because there's a number of places you can get them in and around Peoria. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on this portion of the show, we have three out of five members of the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band who are about to head off on a tour of London, playing lots of clubs in London. It looks like a really fun time. And I first encountered these guys, I don't even know how long ago it's been now, and I was really kind of blown away. I had no idea that anybody was playing this kind of blues in Champaign-Urbana. And that was some years ago, and they've only gotten richer and riper and better since then. And we're really pleased that we're able to have three other members with us. And they are the lead vocalist and guitarist, Dander Duncanson, and harmonica player and backing vocalist, Deke Harp, and on guitar also, Josh Stimmel. Right live in our studios, we're going to have some tunes of theirs. But first, thank you all very much for coming in. Glad you're able to do it.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thanks.
So, Andrew, this group was your brainchild?
Well, sort of. Me and this guy over here, Josh, and Chris, our bass player, along with Anthony DeCerbo, who was our drummer when we first started. We were just in high school, and yeah.
So how long ago was that?
Be 10 years ago, yeah.
So you have hit your 10th anniversary, or
we
about
have.
To?
We're our first show officially was in May of 2000, but we did we had been together in prior to that in 99.
Yeah, so did you have a big 10th anniversary bash, I imagine, at some point?
Yeah, yeah.
Any excuse for a bash?
Yep.
Yeah, how did you get into the blues? Or how did you even discover that you could do the blues? I mean, you personally.
Well, I started listening to blues when I was a kid, and I wanted to play guitar. That's pretty much it. So I wanted to do what I was hearing on the records.
Was somebody playing this at home, and you were around, or these were just records you found?
My dad had a couple of blues tapes, and I kind of borrowed them and took off on my own from there.
And that was that. Somehow it resonated, and you wanted to do it.
Yep.
Because you do kind of incredible job of the vocals. I mean this, you've probably heard this before. I often think of the blues as a black, you know, African American mm-hmm. art form. It started there. And if I were not looking, I would assume you were not white.
Right.
Which you've probably heard before.
I heard that a few times.
One way or another.
I hear that a lot from the African American community.
Yeah.
Is where I hear that maybe the most from.
Yeah, I mean, is that, how did you, did you, is that just strictly from copying so much of what you heard? I mean, just adapting it and absorbing it, and
I think,
and what do you think?
I think it has a lot to do with language, and the way, you know, you speak is, you know, a lot of times it's kind of the way you're going to sing. And growing up, you know, I guess my speech was a little bit more slang style, you know. I looked it up the other day. There's a term called African-American vernacular or something like that, you know. And I don't know, man. That's just adapted that to a singing style.
And it works. It works.
And it works,
it
yeah.
Works really well. And what about the rest of you guys, Josh? I mean, were you brought into the blues by Andrew, or were you have a similar sort of intro to it?
Well, I was first introduced to the actual sound of the blues through him, but I think I was always kind of geared that way anyway. I started off listening to heavy metal, like real serious rock, Pantera, Slayer, all that kind of stuff, because I thought it was the rawest music on the planet. But it turns out that it wasn't. So when I found that, then I, you know, realized what it was.
And it worked for you, too.
And it worked for me, and I just stuck with it. And
so were you playing rock guitar before that, or mostly
just
listening?
I had only been playing for about 2.5 years prior to forming this band, maybe 3 years. So, yeah, I had a little bit of rock chops going on, but I didn't really form into the guitar player I am today until several years after I started playing the roots music.
And then picking up the blues. And Deke, you're the one non-original member of the band.
Yes.
Of these three right here. How long have you been with Kilbourne Alley?
I'd say on and off for a little over a year. Mm-hmm.
And is the blues something that's been in your blood for a long time, or what?
When I first started, I played trumpet in fifth grade. And then sixth grade, I went to trombone. And then out of nowhere, I was going in the men's room, and I heard this cat playing the harmonica. And it changed from there, just the way the harmonica sounded, especially in that tiled room. And I was, from there I started, I was 12 when I first started playing harmonica. And listened to British blues and Creedence before I found the blues, the real blues stuff like Muddy Waters and Little Walter and James Cotton. And then I started following James Cotton around. And I was able to hang out with him. And
literally following him around.
Wherever he was on the East Coast, I was living in Jersey at the time. I followed him everywhere. And he finally said, Deke, why you keep following me? And I said, well, you know. So he said, how about if you drive the van and you could be, you know, our road manager. So I did that for probably 6 years for him. On and off when he was on the East Coast, because he travels everywhere. But I was able to watch him every night doing it.
And how'd you land in Champaign-Urbana?
I had a friend that had a horse farm and told me I should come out to Oakland, Illinois and check out his farm. And from there I said, wow, this is so much better than the city, and I moved. I bought a 10-acre little spread, me and my girlfriend.
And somehow Andrew found you?
No.
Or you found him?
I was out looking for a band that I could actually get to see without driving all the way to Chicago. And I was at Max Tecklebox one night, and Terry told me about these guys and said, you gotta come out and see them. And that day was probably the best thing that I could say as far as keeping the blues alive in this area. These guys are the ones, you know. And I'm a blues purist, so I can't listen to the rock kind of blues stuff, and these guys just cut the straight up Chicago stuff. And so I just started coming to all of their shows and following them around.
Well, I am curious to know what Chicago blues is, but before we talk about what it is, why don't we hear what it is. These are three members of Kilbourne Alley Blues Band here on Live and Local.
Let's do I Have the Tale, guys. Ready? One, two, three. Whiskey that you're drinking, you know that stuff's gonna stop you from thinking. Say, man, is that gin that you're sipping? You know that stuff's gonna start you tripping. Think it through well, you might wanna quit. You can have the tail, but you gotta take what comes with it. Say, man, is that your girl that you're kissing? You don't know the love you'll be missing. Say, man, is that your girl over there? We gotta get the hell out of here. Think it through well, you might wanna quit. You can have the tail, but you gotta take what comes with it. Tonight I'll follow you all day long. Have you crying saying, baby, can I come home? The things you're doing, they might not love you back. You smell good cheese, but can't see that trap. Think it through well, you might wanna quit. You can have the tail, but you gotta take what comes with it.
Members of the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Andrew Duncanson, vocalist, guitarist, and Deke Harp on the harmonica, and Josh Stimmel also on the guitar. They're missing two members, couldn't make this particular gig. Chris Breen is their bassist and Ed O'Hara the drummer. How does it feel different when you're missing those two?
It's just a drive factor. Just the drum and the bass player make up the heart of the ensemble sound, you know, the heart of it. It's the root. So if you take the root out, then you just, then I turn into the root because I just play the rhythm, you know what I mean?
Do you play something different if when they're here?
No, I play it similar. It's pretty very similar, but
you just
take out
this,
the whole bottom of it, that's all.
Yeah, you just serve the sole function.
Yeah.
Accents it more.
Yeah, just accent it a little bit more to make it a little thumpier, more sharp, tight.
When in a traditional blues band, does it typically have the instrumentation you have, or does it really vary depending upon who it is?
Yeah, I think we have the basic. I mean,
besides
components,
piano,
yeah, you know, a lot of bands have piano, but your basic band is
horn sections, some of them,
two guitars, bass, drum,
yep,
and harmonica or saxophone. You know, that's your basic.
And you can
band.
Use have sets, subsets of that, of course. You know, somebody just might play the guitar and sing,
yeah,
and manage it pretty well. And then they've got essentially cover
back
all
chord
the parts.
Kind of blues, yeah.
Yeah, what makes Chicago blues Chicago blues? Can you describe it? Or Chicago blues as opposed to what other kind of blues?
Yeah, there's this guy named Clifford Anton down there in, was that Austin?
Mm-hmm.
Austin, Texas.
And he had this great idea. He was going to bring Buddy Guy and Junior Wells down to his place at Anton's in Austin. And he's going to have them jam with like Albert King and Albert Collins. These guys are from Texas. And you figured it would just make perfect sense. Well, they got these great blues guys on stage together, and the jam was crap. You know, the two styles are so different, but yet very similar, but they're so different, and it's hard to explain.
Let's
put it that way. It has a lot to do with the feel of the bass and the drums.
It's more.
How about just where they lived is
yeah.
where it really happened.
Yeah. It's more about the real tight driving shuffle, you know.
Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah, very shuffly.
The Texas shuffle is more swingish, you know what I mean? Chicago blues is more, I don't know, it's more soulful, I guess.
I don't know.
Okay, you can't really say that. You can't really knock all that, but
how about
I don't know. It's more related to soul music. I don't know.
The folks in Austin might take it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd say it's kind of lump. It's more lumpy.
It's the lumpy lump, the Chicago shuffle. You know, that's
Jimmy Reed style.
Well, when you have and some. People will play blues completely acoustically, you know, non-electric. And was it Chicago that started with the electric, or certain players that started electric?
No, it was the Delta players moved up there and started playing Delta up there at Maxwell Street.
This is a great migration.
Robert Nighthawk. And
the 30s and 40s, 20s even.
When was Muddy Waters? I don't know my history. My blues.
He moved up there in 45, I think.
Because I remember reading, I thought that he was acoustic until he landed in Chicago, and mm-hmm. then somebody handed him
He actually made one record first for Chess, all acoustic too, with all acoustic instruments, Willie Dixon playing stand up.
So that's not necessarily characteristic of Chicago either, because it's a lot of other people do that, and pretty mm-hmm. much everybody's gone electric.
He liked when Leonard gave him the plug. So he can electrify the blues.
Yeah. You guys, speaking of Chicago, you guys just won an award here just a few days ago.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
There's an online magazine called bluesblast.com, and they decided that they needed, there was room for at least two awards in the blues, because we already have the BMAs, which are held by the Blues Foundation down in Memphis. But this guy with this magazine decided, you know, we need an award show, we need it in Chicago. So they have the Blues Blast Music Awards. And we were nominated for two this year. We were nominated for Best Band. And we were nominated for the Sean Costello Rising Star Award. And that's the one we won.
And who was Sean Costello?
Sean Costello was a guitar player, singer out of Atlanta who... died a couple years ago, and he was only 28 years old, so that's why they named the award after him. He was a real talent too.
And so a lot of people get nominated from around the country, around the world. How do you get nominated for this thing?
You know
voted by internet votes.
Yeah,
I think it was mostly national. I didn't see a lot of international people on there.
But mostly. A lot of people, a lot of competition, though.
Oh, yeah, they had acts from Oregon to New York, really, come through there and play. So,
So that's a great thing. Congratulations. And you're all about to head off to London. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, but before we do, how about a little more music?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's kill one.
Let's do a slow minor thing in D.
Thank you. said I can't go on living. I can't go on living this way. She said I can't go on living. Can't go on living this way.
Kilbourne Alley Blues Band, or three members thereof: Andrew Duncanson, vocalist, guitarist, Dee Karp on the harmonica, and Josh Stimmel guitar. Heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Is your last name really Harp? Didn't think so. It was too much of a coincidence to have Dee Karp playing the harp.
My last name's Dee Hart, though, so
oh, it
kind of meets up with it.
There we go. All right. Any idea why? How'd the harmonica get called the harp? Always kind of
French harp. They call it the French harp.
Really?
Back in the day, in the 1900s or whatever.
Oh, that was news to me. See, I learn stuff on this show, I'll tell you, all the time. Kilbourne Alley's here because they are about to head off on a what might be an unprecedented tour of London, at least if as far as they know, according to your website anyway, that it seems like nobody's really done a sustained tour, blues tour of London. You're going to be there for almost 2 weeks, and then kicking that off with a party and performance on Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock at Po' Boys in Urbana out on High Cross Road. Tell me how you decided to go to London, how you even found out this was a good idea, or how did this all happen?
Well, we don't know if it's a good idea yet.
Why did it seem like a good idea?
Well, my dad's over there a teacher right now, and he's the one that books the band anyway, so he's got us a bunch of gigs. That's where we're going.
And that's it.
We want to play. Yeah, that's about it.
Is London a blues town as far as you know, or?
Well, yeah, I think so.
There's a lot of jazz clubs and blues.
Are there?
Clubs in there.
Yeah, I think it's probably ranks up there with one of the best blues cities in the world, I think.
Really?
You know?
Punk music started there, and that's closely related.
Yeah, I mean, talking about Eric Clapton and the Yardbirds and
they'd be playing
Rolling Stones. I mean, this is all blues music.
I guess you're right.
When they first started, yeah.
Yep.
The Yardbirds is playing at one of the clubs like 3 days before we are at one of the clubs we're at.
There you go.
There's so many of those groups that...
The drummer's left.
That somehow seem quintessentially American. I always forget that they're British.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and those Clapton and the mm-hmm. Rolling Stones are two of the ones that I just don't even think about.
And and we're hoping to do what, you know, Jimi Hendrix did. You know, he was...
You don't want to do what he ultimately did.
Not what he ultimately did.
I think we might
be... We ain't about all of that.
but no, he was... He was nobody here in the States. He went over there and he blew up.
Mm-hmm.
That's when, but.
That is the goal.
So you think that might happen?
I don't know what's going to happen. Like I said, I don't know if it's a good idea yet.
If you get some big old record company to follow you around.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yep.
Well, we're glad to have the occasion to have you on the show. I'll take any excuse to have people come on and play live in the studio.
Well.
And, maybe one of these days we'll be set up that we can actually go out and do concert recordings and then hear the full band, which would be not impossible, but a little trickier to get in here.
Yeah.
So why don't we go out with what I imagine will be a different kind of tune than that one.
Okay.
Probably a little more upbeat, maybe.
We'll find out. I mean, you're calling them as they come.
No set lists, yeah.
When
in doubt, shuffle.
Shuffle it up. Go for it, Josh. We'll go E.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
that funny feeling. I'm all alone, but now I'm going home. Best love I ever had. Going home to my baby. People, that ain't bad. Headed down State Street, looking for a vine. Trying to find the girl that blew my mind. I'm going home. Best love I ever had. Going home to my baby. People, that ain't bad.
Kilbourne Alley Blues Band, three members of them, of the band anyway, Andrew Duncanson, Josh Stimmel, and Deke, whatever his name is.
Harp.
Harp, playing the harp here on Live and Local. Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Michael DeHart.
There you go. This is FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly.